Welcome to another Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we've got Shauna Compton Game. Shauna, you are a money wellness expert, certified financial planner with an MBA on a mission to revolutionize how people think, act, and feel about their money. You're also a fellow podcaster, the host of The Millennial Money, which has listeners in over 164 countries and over 15 million downloads. Aside from the podcast, you are Chief Everything Officer at Hello, It's Me, and creator of the Money Mindset Journal. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you so much for being here. It's when somebody reads off your bio, you always feel a little bit more accomplished than you feel normally. So thank you for that. A little bit of an ego boost.
Kudos to you for all that you've done for the space and on your side of things. I'm pretty sure it's been rewarding personally and professionally. So kudos to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I just, I love what I do. And I'm this weird kind of mix of like half creative, half expertise. And so both of those are always like in a full-on like dual fight of which one's going to win. And so I finally learned like I just need to come to some sort of peace with both sides and understand like this is authentically who I am. And I look a little bit different and have a little bit different career than most CFPs. But I think that's the really cool thing about being a CFP is it doesn't have to look like anybody else.
No, I love that. I love that you have that approach and you have that attitude because I think it does begin with a mindset, right? You know, there is a, and we'll get into this, but there is a image of this button up, austere, ivory desk of a person that's supposed to be your financial advisor, but who wants to talk to that person?
Not me. I will just say that for 100% certainty.
No, that's cool. Let me just ask you, how are you personally doing with COVID? We're in the midst of a pandemic as we're recording this. I'm just curious how have things been for you as you're, you know, coping as a, you know, just as a human really in this.
Yeah, you know, it's been so interesting. Ups and downs, of course. I live in Los Angeles, so we were really hit pretty hard. And so, you know, we basically were locked down from last February until pretty much this February, March. So very long period of time. And, you know, a lot of interesting learning lessons about the things that you really want out of life. And I think that's the really cool part of the year we just went through is having time to work on yourself, but also having time to really think about like what matters to you, what's important. And I know I did a lot of that. Like something really unique about myself is 2.5 years ago, I became deaf in my left ear from an injury. And I'm deaf and I have chronic tinnitus, which is just like 24-hour whirling, buzzing in my ear all day long. And so that requires like a different mindset, balance approach to life just in itself. But last year, I think I really just gave myself permission to slow down, take things like a little bit easier and also really figure out like what I want out of life. And so for me, I think it was a blessing, even though, of course, I never wanted anybody to get sick or obviously no one die. But yeah, it's just been a really interesting time. I think like one of those times that we'll just never forget as humans, hopefully.
No, you're right. You're right. And I want to dive into that a little bit too, because you're right in that this is the year, you know, so I've been married 24 years this May, and me and my wife were always like, so what year was that? This is going to be one of those times in history where we're always going to be like, COVID, 2020, mask, all the kind of lockdown. We knew everything that was happening in 2020. We will never, there's so much glue around that. So you're right. But I love also the personal journey that you went on. And thank you for being authentic, because I think, you know, as we're talking about this topic of serving millennials as next generation financial professionals, I think there is an authenticity component that is, you know, kind of germane to this profession. The better ones, the best ones are super authentic, and they're able to allow that authenticity resonate with the type of clients that they want to serve. And I think that's really important, whether we're serving millennials or not. So I'm really glad you brought that in. But speaking of these millennials, let's talk millennials real quick. So I think somewhat maybe unfair, they get a lot of front and center type of attention when it comes to money, and particularly money mistakes. I read a lot of that about millennials. And I just wonder about this stereotype about millennials. You've done a lot of work on your platform, and I wonder what your opinion is about the marketing machine and how it has kind of painted this group of individuals.
It's such an interesting question. I mean, I think that millennials have a really interesting environment that they grew up in. I mean, I am right in that like middle ground between millennial and Gen X. So depending on what survey you're listening to, I can flop one way or another.
Yep.
So I kind of call myself like the millennial big sister, if you will. But you know, most millennials have grown up with technology their entire lives. So they don't know what it's like to not have a cell phone, to not have apps, to not have social media. And that in itself has created like a really interesting world for millennials. I mean, there's obviously consumerism is always present in every generation, but really in millennials, and even younger, of course, the Gen Zers for sure. But millennials also are a generation that I think, if my statistics are correct, they are the most college-educated generation. However, with that also means student loan debt. So most millennials are graduating with massive student loan debt. And, you know, depending on when they graduated, they could have graduated around the time 2008, 2009, when things were just not so great. And, you know, their job market just looks different. And so it's, you know, they really do get a bad rap. But I would say that millennials really want to figure out, how do I build sustainable wealth? And then they're also really open to new ideas. They look at retirement differently. This is the generation of side hustles, of wanting to try different things. And so I just really think that they're just this really cool, interesting generation. And from my perspective, there's a lot to learn from them. But you know, they also didn't grow up learning about money. I think of all the generations, they really have this lack of money education, and they don't know who to turn to.
Unpack and that so, a bit. I concur yeah. with that. I concur with that. I think, you know, there was definitely a segment of us Gen Xers that grew up without that conversation, but I don't know where the vacuum happened. But maybe it's because so many Gen Xers, I don't know. I don't know anecdotally how this happened. But the point is I think there's a vacuum to your point. And I wonder if you have any statistics or rationale behind how that happened, because they are one of the more financially illiterate classes of people that we've had. Now, granted, yes, they are doing a lot to turn that leaf over. But as far as where they began, where they started from.
Yeah, I don't have any like solid statistics, and that's something I've spent a lot of time really thinking about. Like, how did this happen? You know, I think a lot of Gen Xer parents feel like they didn't really know anything about money, but somehow they were able to graduate college, like buy a house, start a career, potentially a little bit easier than millennials have been able to do. And so I don't know, but there was just this real void of conversation, I think, from Gen X or parents to millennials. And then I think, I mean, you know, I don't know the science behind this, but I would have to imagine just the internet and social media and kind of like everything in a millennial's face all the time, all day long, that there isn't this focus on, you know, like, let's pick up a money book and let's read, you know, something educational about money. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways I could go with this. I mean, I teach a couple college courses at a university here in Los Angeles, and I have pushed and pushed for like a mandatory money class. And there just isn't, you know, the won't give you the academia response around it, but let's just say there isn't the importance on that. So, you know, I don't really know what happened, but there's definitely something between the Gen X parents and the millennials where there was just this void. And, you know, most millennials are just like looking around, like, I don't know where to get this advice. Now we have like TikTokers, you know, who are not money experts. They're not you and I and the people listening who have sat across like real humans helping them with their money. And so there's all this advice out there now all of a sudden. And I think it's even more dizzying than ever before.
I would agree with that. I was going to say that I think you hit on something that I'm like, I bet you that might be it, in that we've moved away from, okay, so back in the day, we used to have telephones, and I don't mean cell phones. I mean, telephone, like landlines.
The thing on the wall.
Yeah. The landline where somebody would call you, and the only way you could talk to them, or only way you can communicate unless you went to go visit them, was actually call them. Like, me and my wife fell asleep on the phone so many times as we were dating. Like, so that's what the generation I grew up in. But anyways, I think that forced a level of interaction and communication and relationship that allowed the platform, if you will, or the space for these conversations about money, about all kinds of things. And what I do know is that as I've gotten older, the native language has been the phone. Like, my kids text me all the time. That's how that happens. They don't, you know, that I was, I'll say this, I'm telling my 19-year-old daughter. So she gets a speeding ticket going from here to her college that she's at. And it's through one of these small, you know, Texas towns or whatnot. And she has to show up in court. And so this is all through, I can't remember, I think this is through the pandemic or the freeze we had here. Anyways, the point is, she couldn't get in contact with them. She's like, their website's down. And I was like, call them. And she was like, oh. But that's just to say, this generation, the phone? What is a phone? Like, you know, I don't have that. So anyways, all that to say, I think the communication around these type of important conversations where we sat around the table and had dinner and talked about how your day, they've evaporated. And maybe that's the reason why. So I don't know. Maybe we can just hem and haw about that. But I think it's a fun topic to talk about anyway.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there's just this lack of communication. And then we don't like to talk about money anyway. I mean, that isn't a normal dinner time conversation, should be, but isn't. So yeah, I think you put all that together in like a giant pot, and it just creates this void of knowing about money.
Yeah, yeah. Let's pivot a little bit. So I have listeners that want to get into this industry or already in this industry, just started type of deal. And they're looking at us and they're like, okay, two CFP professionals, it's going to be a little while to get there, da, 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 da. But for those people that do want to serve those type of clients with the CFP, I'm wondering if you've noticed, and based on what all we said, we have to, but I maybe you can unpack this for a bit, has there been enough change in the financial services industry to serve the needs of this new generation of millennials? Because it's way different than, you know, Mrs. Smith calling to check on her IRA. Did you send her a check? You know, it's a little different than that.
Wow, that is a great question. I would say yes and no. It wasn't even until, my memory might be serving me wrong, but it really wasn't until even a few years ago where it was like okay for a CFP to have social media. It's still somewhat on the fringes for some people, depending on who you work for. And to me, that's insane, because that's where this generation and younger generations are hanging out. That's where they're learning. That's where they're communicating and having these conversations. So I think that's imperative as a CFP to be able to utilize technology like that. But on the other side, you know, there are a lot of great innovative firms where things are virtual, you know, virtual financial planning. I have a lot of friends who that is their bread and butter. And I really think, you know, I mean, obviously we just went through this pandemic where everything was virtual. And I think a lot of things are going to stay that way. And certainly the younger generations, that's what they like. They like to be able to be in their PJs having a meeting with you about their money. So, you know, I really think that's the wave of the future. We're also in a really global environment. I mean, a lot of people want to live abroad or live, you know, somewhere else or go travel. And so, you know, being able to have a practice that, you know, serves those types of younger clients, I think is really important. And, you know, from my work with like millennials and younger generations is they want a different experience. They demand a different experience. They want this to be engaging. They want this to be fun. They want this to be approachable. And, you know, you can't expect a millennial or Gen Zer, and of course I'm using broad strokes here, but, you know, to come into like some stuffy office with all their papers and sit down and have a 2-hour meeting about their money, like it just is not going to work. And so it involves innovation. It involves thinking about the whole process from a different lens. And I think, you know, the CFP world at whole is just a little bit slow and kind of moving in that
direction. You can tell the truth. They're Stone Age when it comes to this. I mean, technology is moving so fast, but at the same time, there are those Byzantine firms that have all those forms. I was just thinking about when you said that, I was thinking about my onboarding process, which is probably the most painful process, for most advisors when you're trying to collect that, you know, people are getting financially naked and they're giving their bank statements, all this stuff that is just so arduous. And I was even thinking through this because I've always been trying to find the best process. I was talking with Patrick Mahoney and Skip Swice of FPA, and they were talking about how, I think he was saying, Patrick was talking about his, I think it was his tax process. But anyways, they met on Zoom and they exchanged all their documents through a secure portal. And he was like, it was the greatest experience I ever had. And I was like, this is where it's going. You can't come into, you know, expect the clients to come in with their big Sears Roebuck catalog of documents. Nobody's going to do all that anymore. And it sounds like that's what you're noticing about this generation.
Yeah, you know, and I think thinking about entry points too, like different entry points is really important. Like, you know, there's obviously this surgence of whether it's podcasts or courses or workshops, whatever it might be, that is maybe a little easier entry point for some people who are interested in working with you, but like not quite sure yet, certainly don't want to hand over thousands of dollars. And so thinking about like other ways that you can get people in the funnel, if you will, get them used to you, used to your style, used to your teaching, whatever that might be. And then it becomes easier to move them over to a client. So I think, you know, just thinking about the whole process differently. Not everyone, of course, is going to, you know, take those easier routes, if you will. Some people just need the full-on financial planning. But I think it does. It's just, you know, we really need like a breath of fresh air in the industry, and we need this innovation. Otherwise, no, it's just not going to work.
Well, you make a whole lot of good points. I mean, part of my business is to consult advisors, and when I'm asking them, unless they're just, it's just prohibitive. And I've even been, you know, I've been accused of doing this, but I'm like, if your firm's not letting you do video and social at a minimum, you might want to leave. Because I'm like, the clients that you're going to be getting for the next 20, 30 years, if you don't have a social presence, and this gets into my next question. I think the level of, so I'll just use a page from my own book. Like I've brought on several clients that have told me the following before we even get to the second meeting. So we have this, the discovery meeting, the first initial one, and they go, no, I feel pretty comfortable. I was on your video, on your website, watching your videos. And so they feel already like they know a part of me. And that level of, I think, exposure, which, you know, can be uncomfortable at the beginning. I totally get that. But it allows them in, because this is the generation that reads like Amazon reviews before they buy stuff. They, or, you know, it's social proof or bust. I mean, you know, there's no other way.
1,000%.
Coaching. Now, that's probably a topic that you either know you needed or you don't. So I'm not here to tell you that you need a coach. However, what I will tell you is that as an existing financial professional, sometimes you might find yourself a little inconsistent or even frustrated when you compare your success to those of your peers. That's because you have more in you, my friend. You got more to pull out. You got some more potential. Enter the Masterclass Coaching Lab. Having consulted some of the top advisors over the past few years, including building my own wealth management firm, I know what it takes to take you and your team to the next level. So as one of my coaching clients, we're gonna have a no-fluff, customized plan to absolutely crush your goals. No BS, no fluff. Need to break away and start your own firm? Got you covered. Need to find your ideal client? Got you covered. Maybe you need help finding that ideal client or implementing some ROI producing systems and workflows. Got you covered. In either case, the Masterclass Coaching Lab is probably for you. Look, if you're serious about getting to the next level and you need some assistance, all you need to do is go to thejumpstartcoachinglab.com/masterclass and get started with your application. Let's get back to that episode. Is there a characteristic of maybe transparency, like greater transparency? I know that they require that, but like kind of walk me through that. Like, do you feel this generation of millennials is like more transparent than say baby boomers or previous generations?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you look at the stats, a millennial generation is more than happy to share their salary with people. I mean, when I was in my 20s, I wouldn't dream of sharing my salary information with like strangers. But this generation, they're an open book. And I think this really points to growing up in a social media world where everything is on display, good or not good. That's just kind of the dynamic that was created. So I think transparency is really, really important. I mean, on my podcast, Millennial Money, I share so many things about my own money journey that might make some people cringe a little bit. But what I found is just being relatable and sharing that even though I'm a money professional, I still haven't done everything quote unquote perfectly. And I've made plenty of money mistakes myself. The millennial generation really can find like humanity in that and connect to that more so than they can of some, to use your word, like stodgy financial planner who's coming across as perfect and they have everything buttoned up. I mean, that might resonate with a few people, but I would say, you know, 9 out of 10 times being real, being able to show yourself, being authentic, not being afraid to put yourself out there, I think is the thing that's gonna win the clients, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you. I was on a group coaching call with some people inside my community last night, and I was saying, you know, one of the top characteristics, and I want you to chime in on this and give us your list also about what you think is the desired skill sets of that next generation financial planner, is this level of what the old folks used to call it bedside manner, but this EQ, right? Like you have to be able to diagnose. I was saying how I was talking to a prospect the other day and they said the word investments like 3 times in the first 2 minutes. And I was like, I'm listening to this. And granted, I have a little age on me. So I've been doing this a little while. But the point is, when they said that, I knew what they were trying to say. They felt like they're behind. And when you're feeling behind, you're feeling intimidated. So there's no way I need to come in there with all that I know. Like, forget all the information exchange right now. Let's just calm, bring it down a little bit and start asking some questions, right? And so I think a lot of what you're saying about the transparency, being human, the relatability, these are things that if you want to serve in this industry, period, but specifically if you're going to hone in on this demographic, if you don't have those, it's church for you. It's church for you. What are your thoughts?
1,000%. I mean, I feel like it's no joke to say that as a financial planner, especially to younger generations, you are about 90% financial therapist and 10% financial expertise. Of course, you got to know the goods, but this generation just requires that touch, again, that quality of humanity that maybe other generations, they needed it, but maybe it wasn't as, you know, center as it is for millennials, right? It's one of the reasons why I started my company, Hello, It's Me, and our first product is a money mindset journal, because I saw working with clients ranging from, you know, $100 million estates to people just starting out, all different ages, all different demographics. It was that the mindset piece was where the magic was. That was really where the financial transformation happened. And I would see the same wording like you're talking about, the same mannerisms, the same hesitancies, lack of habits, whatever it is, come up over and over and over again. And so I started to think, like, there is something about this mindset piece. And as financial planners, we don't think about that enough. We don't talk about that enough. We kind of gloss over that and just want to go to the strategy piece, but really understanding the mindset of the of your client, where they're coming from, where the hangups are, those are the roadblocks that you can help them navigate. And then you just lay that strategy piece on top. And before you know it, like, change happens. Sometimes doesn't happen with everybody, but that's on them, right? But recognizing that is really important. So I think especially with millennial and younger generations, a real understanding of the EQ part of it is absolutely necessary. That is going to set you apart, I believe 100%.
So you bring up something that I think is so important, and I don't want people to miss this. So just recently, I think for the next round of testing, starting in 2022 and beyond, the CFP is including this behavioral finance psychology component. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Finally.
Yes, finally. Thank you. So you say it too. And I think, you know, this is where I have a buddy that teaches this stuff, Gary Clement, and he's saying, like, this is the future of financial planning, is the behavioral component. And I don't want to make light of the fact that there are different vocations within the financial continuum: planner, advisor, coach, therapist, that you can be really trained on. But to your point, there is a lot of therapy that we do. And to get comfortable with that and to start to allow for space in the client relationship to allow that to happen, how do people do that? How do people pull that off, Shauna?
That is... That's a tough thing to answer. I mean, it's a little bit like the secret sauce, if you will, and it's going to be a little bit different for each person, but I think it really comes from being able to be transparent with yourself first, and having some of those maybe tough money conversations with yourself, and also being able to open yourself up that you don't have to come across as perfect. And that doesn't mean you are a, you know, bad financial planner, if you will, right? So I think it starts there. But practically speaking, I would say, you know, start having these conversations with friends and family members, like people where it feels like it's a safe environment. Start talking to them about their relationship with money. How does money make them feel? All of these sort of feely questions can help you tiptoe, I think, into that space of feeling okay to have those conversations, because especially with younger clients, it's going to come up. There's going to be these hangups that come up. Like, for instance, I just had friends who have done all the right things. They've saved a ton of cash. They lived in a small one-bedroom apartment. Now they want to buy a house. And buying a house in Los Angeles right now means you pretty much got to make a $1 million investment just to buy a small house. And so they have the cash, but now it's coming to the point where they need to actually, like, put the cash for the down payment. And there's so many mindset blocks that are just coming up right, left, right, left, right, left, right. So you have to be able to have those conversations with people and back them off that ledge and talk to them about the emotional side of money. And that doesn't require you coming in with the knowledge of, you know, this is going to be a great purchase for you. You know, you have all the math, you have all the numbers. It requires that softer approach. So I think it's definitely something you develop over time. You don't step into the first client and have this mastered, but start with friends, start with family members, and start with some of those just like higher level questions. Like, what does money mean to you? How does money make you feel? Right? Those are great. I have found entries into figuring out where somebody is emotionally around money. And then from there, you kind of take it from there. But, you know, I would say just practice. This is all practice and just getting comfortable with having these conversations.
It is kind of funny, you know, the real technical term for the certified financial planner practitioner is kind of like, you know, that's the real technical term, right? So you are practicing, right? So I love that. I love that you say that, because some of this stuff, I often tell people, like, so how did you get to this point? I'm like, dude, I yes, CFP, yes, masters, but I've also raised three adult children. I've been married for 24 years. So like a lot of my advice comes from like living life too. So there's that, right? And you can't skip through yes. the part. That's the messy middle, as one of my guests has said before.
But what's so great is like you bring that to the conversations. And that's what I mean. Like, show up as your whole self, as your authentic self. This is who I am. This is what I've walked through. Like, that's what clients can connect to.
Yeah.
Right. It's a relationship. So be an equal party in that relationship.
Let me step on some toes real quick, because I wonder how you think about this based on your answers. Because the establishment, and I'm gonna go ahead and say it, the broken dealer, I think they have, it's a numbers game. It's an AUM grab. Now, granted, some of them are doing a better job at starting to interweave financial planning, comprehensive financial planning at the beginning of this, instead of just saying, hey, give me your money, we'll invest it, we'll get you the best returns. But when somebody comes into that ethos, you know, they essentially have to dial for numbers, dial for dollars. It's an AUM grab. And, you know, that mindset is not always the one that I think allows them to show up their most authentic self, because you're really playing a part that may be you or may not be you. So how does this, I know, yeah, I think you probably would say this hurts the industry, but like some people have to start like that. So what would be your advice to them?
Yeah, that's a reality. Some people do have to start like that. And I think, you know, first really know yourself. Is that an environment where you might thrive in? For me, absolutely not. But that's just my personality. So, but some people are very different. That might feel really exhilarating for the certain type of person, right? So first, really understand who you are and put yourself, or do your best to put yourself in an environment where you feel like you're going to thrive. But even if you are dialing for AUM, you're still having a relationship with someone. So you might not go that deep necessarily, but you still have to engage in conversations. There still is an exchange going on. So, you know, you can practice at all these pieces of financial planning the whole way along your career. And, you know, I think of it like a puzzle, right? So you're putting all these different pieces together, and every piece has a different role. So if that's how you start out, that's great. Like, you're going to take what you can from that and learn from that. And maybe you practice the conversation piece a bit, but then maybe you move on your career to something else and pick up a different, you know, piece of that puzzle.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There is this, you know, layering effect, right? Where, you know, you start with that foundation, whatever that is, and then you hopefully build from there. I think you said something earlier about the way that we can kind of practice on this. And as we kind of bring this in for landing, I wonder what you think about financial professionals having advice in their life, having a coach, having a financial advisor. What do you think about that? Because I remember way back in the day when I was in that channel, my, you know, general manager, sales manager guy was like, so how are things going? I'm like, they're going. And he was like, so how's your sales on your life insurance or whatever? And I was like, is this, you know, it's kind of meh. And he was like, well, have you purchased life insurance yourself for your family? And I was like, no, not yet. And he was like, that's the problem. He's like, it's going to be really hard to speak with conviction around anything that you have not done. And I was like, that's a good point. Now, that's not always applicable in every instance, but what is your thought on financial professionals, aspiring financial professionals, having someone, tax professional, somebody that's in their life as a coach that they are getting advice from, if they want to be the advice giver?
I think that is the foundation that we all should build. I'm a huge fan of having people. You name it. I have people in my life in all different spheres that give me all different types of advice. I mean, it's not humanly possible that we would know everything about everything. So I think it's great to humble yourself and let somebody who is an expert in a different area give you some insight, give you some advice. A lot of times they can see something in you or in your career path that maybe you can't see. I've had a business coach for years and years and years, and she gives me feedback that good and not so good at times that is really, really valuable. And I wouldn't get that anywhere else. So yeah, 100%. I think having people, having coaches is imperative to growing in life, growing your career. I just think it should be the cornerstone, if you will.
I've seen definitely a change in the taste across the demographics, because I kind of border, you know, my two younger sisters are both millennials. And I think this is more of a, what's the show me state? Missouri. They're millennials are from Missouri, because it's like, well, have you done it? You know, they're not going to have the trainer that's 50 pounds overweight. They're like, that's no. Not the way they operate. That's not their MO. And I think, you know, although, you know, sometimes, and I talk to financial professionals about this, I'm like, okay, maybe you don't have a financial advisor, but do you have a tax professional? Do you have somebody that you kind of submit to as an authority and you say, hey, I'm going to outsource this part of my life because I know I can be more efficient if you do that and give me advice, which is what you're saying. Because I think if you've never had that dynamic, it's hard. You know, people look at me and they're like, oh, you're doing such a great job. I'm like, well, I've had a YouTube coach for the last 2.5-3 years. Like, so like I'm putting the right work in and I'm putting my money where my mouth is. And I think millennial clients want to see their professional put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah. I mean, it's so important because I think it shows that we all need a coach. I mean, that's just human nature. We all need somebody. And so millennials want to see, yeah, that you're getting coached up by somebody else. And, you know, that person's getting coached up by somebody else, but they want to see that you have actually done the thing that you're talking to them about doing. That's something that's really important. Even if it's been a messy journey, I say all the better, right? For millennials, right?
Yeah,
they enjoy that humanity of it. But yeah, I mean, humble yourself, get a coach. I guarantee you your life's going to change no matter what it is.
No, you're right. I would agree with that. So cool. I always end these with, as you know, this is a podcast to empower the next generation financial professional to serve their client at the next best level, right? Their highest best use. With that context, Shauna, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with our audience?
Don't be afraid to be different. So I would say own your authenticity, own all those things that make you you, and put those out in the world. That is how you're going to attract a clientele base forever and ever and ever. Don't be afraid to be you. I think it's really boring to be just like everybody else. So find what makes you different, whether that's a specific niche or a talent or a thing about you, and own that. And I think that's going to be your secret sauce.
I love that. Wow. Well, thank you for your time today. Thank you for imparting into this audience. I know they're going to appreciate it. And I wish you all the best for the rest of 2021.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation.